Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Depending on what TV critic or Trekkie you ask, Paramount Plus's new Star Trek chapter, Strange New Worlds, is the best new Trek series in years, decades, or ever. Hear one reason why this series is generating so much buzz early. It's co-star Bruce Horak, and he'll join me next in an internet radio exclusive. On Wednesday, Disney Plus will erase the curtain on The Quest, a series that blends scripted fantasy with unscripted competition. Executive producer Elise Zarghieri and Bertram Van Muster will join us and explain next half hour. Also ahead, Microsoft may be getting into the smart TV picture. We'll explain how. Pantaya folds into Televisa Univision, and our new classic trivia question and prize. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to all the good stuff whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in our hour. Great to have you with us this day after Mother's Day for the program all about TV's current and future. 66 beautiful degrees at the top of the hour. I have some wonderful guests for you over the next 60 minutes. We invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and call in. When you do, use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, no problem. Use our chat room. It's available to you right now. SimonApple04 is the name of the room, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions. Other people live with you. From Star Trek Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus, Bruce Horak will join us from Stratford, Ontario, after these news notes. Is Microsoft ready to enter the smart TV market? Yes, according to a group of technology website reports posted earlier today. Microsoft, these reports point out, will come out with a Roku or Amazon Fire TV type device by the middle of 2023, offering a variety of Xbox games playing on the TV set, plus movies and other content. Some reports are adding that Microsoft will be part of Samsung's upcoming game hub that was announced 4 months ago at CES. Again, Xbox games will be TV playable through the hub. At this hour, no confirmation of either situation by Microsoft. Pantaya, Hemisphere Media's Netflix-like Spanish-language venture, will be acquired by Televisa Univision. In return, Hemisphere will pick up a pair of Televisa Univision-owned radio stations in Puerto Rico. Pantaya's lineup of movies and series will be incorporated into VIX, that's V-I-X Plus, the subscription demand VIX format starting later this year. The ad-supported format started a few weeks ago. La Academia, or The Academy, the long-running music competition variety series from Mexico, will make a U.S. comeback via Estrella TV next month. Now in its 20th season, the three-hour Sunday program, where contestants vie for $1 million and a recording deal, will be simulcast on both Estrella TV and TV Azteca south of the border. In other Estrella TV developments, two anthology series, scripted anthologies, will premiere the second half of 2022, one where people get one day to relive their lives, and the other exploring mother-children relationships. Now, before we first get some quickies, this just in over the last hour, CBS will continue all three FBI series from Dick Wolf through mid-2024 under a two-year renewal deal. Amazon Navy SEAL series, The Terminal List, will set sail on July 1st. And for the second consecutive year, Peacock will offer the Eurovision Song Contest. Coverage hosted by NBC figure skating analyst Johnny Weir begins tomorrow afternoon and concludes Saturday afternoon. And that is news notes for today. Believe it or not, nearly 2 years ago, Paramount Plus, then CBS All Access, announced the third of the Star Trek live-action series in its canon. First it was Discovery, then Picard, and then Strange New Worlds. Well, this past Thursday, Strange New Worlds premiered, and it got a ton of positive feedback, both from critics and from Trekkies. At least one critic called it the best new Star Trek series in years, another the best new one in decades, and a third went so far as to say it's the best new Star Trek series since The Next Generation, and it's a great love letter at the same time to the original 1960 creation of Gene Roddenberry. Joining us live from Stratford, Ontario to talk about it is one of the co-stars of Strange New Worlds, Bruce Horak. Bruce, welcome in and congratulations.
Thanks very much, Simon. It's great to be here.
And same to have you, Bruce. First of all, what are you hearing from not only yourself but the cast and crew about the reaction so far?
That it has been extraordinary. Yeah, the fans are reaching out, and it seems like it's a hit. It's a hit.
And what makes it even more interesting is that you and your cast are playing many of the original characters that Gene Roddenberry created. For those who are un-Trekkies, you should know that Star Trek, originally, according to the pilot that was called The Cage, did not have William Shatner playing Captain Kirk. It had Jeffrey Hunter playing Christopher Pike, plus a different person playing Spock, plus, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And now, you know, decades later, you and everybody get the chance to really bring those characters to life, not just for one episode, but for a whole series.
Yeah, you know, being able to go back into the canon and flesh out some of these characters and see where they started and the journeys that they go on to get to where we know and love them from the original series, it's a real joy. The character I'm playing is brand new. He hasn't appeared in any other show before, so it's a chance for me to kind of forge some new ground. I think we're all doing that, and it's just such a trip. It's such a thrill.
Talk about your character, because it's quite different from any that any Star Trek series has attempted so far.
Well, the character I'm playing is named Hemmer. He's the chief engineer of the Starship Enterprise, which is the flagship of the Federation. It's their golden Cadillac, and he's the engineer, so he's real good. He's real competent. He's real capable at what he does. He happens to be an Enar, which is an alien race. They are going extinct, so there are not many of them left in the galaxy, in the universe. And the Enar are unique in that they are blind. They don't have the use of their eyes, but they have this incredible telepathic ability, this almost superhuman skill. So even though he doesn't have the use of his eyes, he's able to see, he's able to navigate using this incredible form of telepathy.
And this is a character that we're going to showcase later on. Is one that you can definitely take to heart. We'll get to that in a second. But I'm curious,
sure.
How does the character relate to everybody else, to Pike, to Spock, to Number One, to the other characters from the original series?
Well, he's the engineer, so he certainly has a job to do on the Enterprise. He's got a bit of a gruff exterior for sure, but again, he really wants to connect. He wants to be a part of this family. They really are, you know, they're on this bold exploration, and they're all in it together. So he's definitely got his place, and he knows it, and he's not afraid to tell people what to do and how to do it, because he's the engineer, and he's got some ideas of his own.
Bruce, I think we have some calls. We're going to take one of them right now. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Go ahead, you're on the air. I guess not. So we'll keep going. We'll try to get – I know we have another call on the line. We'll see if we can get that person
sure.
ASAP. Bruce, how did you get the role?
Sure. Well, a casting call went out, almost 18 months ago now, and they were looking for a blind or visually impaired performer to play an alien on a brand new Star Trek. And my agent sent it to me. I leapt at the chance because I'm a huge Trekkie myself, raised on Star Trek and the comic books and the shows and all of that. So when a call went out to be on Star Trek, I leapt at it. And when I read that the character I was going to be seen for was an alien who was also blind and had incredible telepathic abilities, I thought, this is great. So I did, I think, 4 auditions over Zoom with folks from, I think they were in New York and Los Angeles, and it took about a month and a half of Zoom auditions and callbacks, and then away it went. I went in for prosthetic testing, and they tried out contact lenses, and it was just, it was a real whirlwind, to tell you.
Keep the Zoom thought in mind, but first we'll try to see if we get another call on the line. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised.
Sure.
What's your name and where are you calling from? Go right ahead. You're on the line. Apparently not. Talk more about the Zoom process, because that's something that, because of the pandemic, a lot of actors, I'm sure, depending on the TV series, the movie, the role, have to deal with it. How different is the Zoom process of auditioning different from the face-to-face? What is there a certain challenge that you have with Zoom you would not have if you were dealing with people who could see what you're doing or be face-to-face with them?
Well, one of the big challenges, I think on my third audition, it didn't end up recording, and so we had to go back and do it again. You know, the technology is certainly we're pushing the bounds of what it's currently capable of, and I think it's certainly adapting in a lot of ways. I really enjoyed it. It gave me a chance to work from home. It gave me a chance to you know, I could record myself a couple of times beforehand just to see exactly what they were going to be looking at. I was able to arrange my space the way that I wanted it, and I was able to audition for people who were in Los Angeles and in New York, which I had never had the opportunity to do before. So it's actually opened a lot of doors for me as a performer and just as a person in general. I mean, the technology is just extraordinary. And speaking as someone with disability, technology is it's like my guide in a lot of ways. I rely on it in everyday activities, just leaving the house and being able to read small print or whatever. I've just got my phone with me and I'm able to do that. And I think, wow, this is incredible. And when I sat down to do a Zoom audition, I thought this is probably the most perfect way to audition for a Star Trek series is over, you know, over a communicator like this, over the computer. And yeah, what a perfect thing.
You're hearing Bruce Horak. He is one of the co-stars of the hit new series on Paramount Plus, Star Trek Strange New Worlds. It's number three of the current set of Star Trek live-action shows, produced by Alex Kurtzman, Jenny Lumet, and other wonderful folks, including Rod Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's son, who was on our program last fall. Bruce joins us from Stratford, Ontario, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And Bruce is with us this half hour right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and I are with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. 66 degrees at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for Bruce, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week, and coming your way on Friday, a very unusual episode. It's a 90-minute one, and each half hour is devoted to a brand-new venture that will arrive on your television set before the end of the year. The three ventures we're talking about, one is called Chime TV that was announced on Friday here in New York. It is a new attempt to put together a network aimed at Asian Americans. You'll meet the trade association person, Faith Batista, who is putting it together. Also, we'll showcase a new service that's using blockchain technology to put shows on the air and much more behind the scenes in television. It's called Blockboard. You'll meet the founder and chief executive officer, Matt Kesselhoff, and we'll also have the president and chief technical officer, Tarom Yadar. Plus, reset from last week, we'll have from the brand new service, Nuestra TV, that'll be launching in the next few weeks. We'll have the Chief Executive Officer, Alberto Pardo. It's all coming up on Friday. Big 90-minute New Venture Edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, wherever you're catching us right now. As you sort of hinted, you deal on a day-to-day basis with a very unusual situation for an actor or anybody in life. You're blind in one eye. You have issues with the other eye. First of all, how did that happen? And secondly, how, and yet despite that, you have had a wonderful career, not as an actor, but also behind the scenes as a producer, writer, and director. How did you adjust to life as it came to you?
Well, I had how did it happen? I had cancer of the eyes and I was diagnosed when I was about 18 months old. So it's a form of cancer called bilateral retinoblastoma. And it was so bad in my right eye that they had to remove the eye completely, and the left eye, there were just three small tumors on the retina. And initially what the doctor had suggested was that they were going to remove my left eye as well, the fear being that the cancer was going to go up the optic nerve to my brain. But there was someone in Toronto, this doctor, this maverick doctor named Dr. Dart, who was experimenting with radiation. So they flew me to Toronto and they blasted my left eye with radiation. They figured that it would kill the tumors on the retina, and that scar tissue would develop over the whole eye. So I might have some perception of light and shadow, but by a happy accident, I've got 9%, a real small window. It's kind of like looking down through a straw. That's how narrow my field of vision is. I've got about a 9% field of vision. And then as a result of the cataract or the radiation, a cataract developed in my left eye. So I had cataract surgery when I was about 4.5. So I have to wear really heavy, thick bifocal glasses, which I did all the way up until I got my first contact lens in high school. I went to an integrated school, so all of my friends were fully sighted, fully capable colleagues and classmates, and I just found a way to try to keep up. I was told at a pretty young age that, listen, Bruce, it's a sighted world. You got to figure out a way to adapt. And, you know, I had a lot of help in school. I got large print books. I got a little telescope so I could read the blackboard from my desk. And as I got older, the technology started to really pick up and started to advance. So things like GPS navigation. So now I can put my headphones on and get my phone and it will help me to get to a location. I can magnify with my phone. I can zoom in on things. I can take a photograph and zoom in on that. I can dictate to it. So typing is a lot easier. It will read text messages to me. All of those incredible Star Trek type advancements are really just, they're in my pocket now, which is really just incredible. As I said, I've got very limited eyesight, but I have a real love for performing and for entertaining, and I followed a career path that led me into theater primarily. So I write, I produce, I perform on stage. I feel very confident and comfortable in that. It's an environment that I can go into, I can learn the stage and the steps, and I can figure it out in my body so that I'm able to navigate on stage. It's a pretty static environment. Moving into film and television, Star Trek was really my first major experience with it, and I was just absolutely astonished by how flexible and capable the crew were, and just really conscientious of having a performer on the set who wasn't able to see very well. I was very nervous on my first day thinking, well, I'm going to walk into thousands of dollars worth of equipment and maybe they'll never have me back again. But honestly, I had an assistant with me everywhere I went, the directors of photography and the camera operators, and just absolutely everyone was right there with me. They had my back, and any nerves or trepidations that I might have had in going into that new environment as a person with a disability, they were gone right away. And the confidence of the character of Hammer was able to come out because I felt confident and comfortable enough in that environment because everyone was just being so welcoming and just made the whole experience incredibly accessible.
Gucci 2010 is in our chat room, so welcome aboard. If you have a question or comment, put it in the room or make a call, 646-652-2906. When you're on a stage like that, how do you compensate? You said a little bit of it just now, but what other things do you use, especially because you have experience as a director and as a writer? How do you work with the other actors? How do you take direction? How do you manage to memorize scripts? And also, how do you make sure that your movement coincides with post-production when you have to put in special effects or computer graphics or other things that add to the overall Trek atmosphere?
Well, in terms of the stage work that I've done, rehearsals are really important, just to learn the steps and learn the lines and navigate with the other performers. I've also got a background in improvisation, so in that case, rehearsal kind of goes out the window, and you just have to be very present, listening to the other performers, and oftentimes just letting them know beforehand, hey, listen, I'm not going to be able to see you, so if there's some cue that you want to give me an audio signal so I know what you're doing. Just either say, hey, you know, come at you or whatever it is so that I'm able to adapt to that. When we moved into, again, into the film and television, and specifically on the Star Trek, the post-production crew did an incredible thing where they actually digitally changed my eyes. Initially, they were going to try to put contact lenses in my eyes to wipe them out because the character is supposed to be blind and they've kind of got milky eyes. And when they tried one of the contact lenses in me in an early fitting, it just really wasn't going to work. It was going to completely wipe out whatever vision I had. And the doctor said at that time, he's like, look, you've got 9%. Let's save as much of it as we possibly can. And the crew and the production team said, no problem. So after we had shot the thing, I finally got to see Hammer on screen, and they showed me the edit of it. And they've gone in and digitally altered the eyes so that they've actually given me brand new eyes, which is kind of a dream for someone who's lived with 9% their whole life. I mean, they're able to now, with the technology, take someone like myself with a disability and not only make me able, but also make me super able, which honestly, it's a real dream come true. And I feel like it falls completely within the line of what Star Trek aims to do, which is embrace the technology and find a place and a voice for everyone.
Star Trek, Strange New Worlds. It's now playing on Paramount Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart devices. And this half hour, we've got live from Stratford, Ontario, Canada, one of the key co-stars, Bruce Horak. And if you have a question or comment in our remaining moments with Bruce, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up in our next half hour, we have our classic trivia question of the week. We need the answer to our past question. We have a brand new question for you, and we have two prizes in play, two wonderful books. One for you and one for maybe a member of a small fry in your home or apartment. So anyway, we'll get to that. And we'll also have, from the brand new Disney Plus series, The Quest, that premieres on Wednesday, two Emmy Award-winning executive producers. Some people think they're the best in terms of unscripted television. From The Amazing Race, we will have Bertram Van Muster and Elise Dunieri. That's coming up in our next half hour, so stay tuned right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Bruce, how fun is it to take not just your character, but everybody in the cast, and everybody in the production team, to take these characters that many people thought would never have a complete life, like a Christopher Pike, like a Number One, and finally give, you know, these initial Star Trek characters who preceded Captain Kirk and all the other crew of the Enterprise at that time an opportunity to have a life, to have a run in series fashion.
It's the greatest thrill. It really is. Just adding our own story to the canon that is 55-plus years of Star Trek, putting a little bit of, it's like getting the footnotes in a way. We have all of this canon that's already established. And it's like, oh, there's a little gap here. We don't really know these characters before Kirk comes on and before, you know, Spock is Number One and all of that. We don't have those particular chapters in the book. And it's like, oh, suddenly we've got this opportunity to fill that out a little bit. And for me, just being able to walk onto the bridge of the Enterprise to step into that place that I have been watching since I was a little kid and just to explore that it's a real thrill. It's a dream come true. And in a lot of ways, I feel like a kid in a candy store because I've got a character that we've never seen before. We know very little about him or even the species, the Enar species. So every line that I say, every adventure that occurs with Hemmer is another, you know, it's another footprint in the concrete that is settling around the canon that is Star Trek. And what an absolute honor and a thrill. And the fact that the fans are responding to it the way that they already are is, you know, it's a real testament to just the love and the hopeful vision that is what Roddenberry created. And, you know, everyone that is working on this show is bringing their A game. They're artists at the peak of their craft, and I feel just absolutely blessed and overwhelmed at times to be a part of it. What a thrill. What a thrill, Simon.
Yeah, by the way, let's talk about your fellow cast members who are
sure.
are already capturing the attention of viewers. People like Asim Moran, who plays Captain Christopher Pike, Rebecca Romijn, we've seen her who plays the Number One character. Ethan Peck, who plays Spock and a science officer. I mean, there's some great talent on all fronts with the cast.
Oh, sure, yeah. But absolutely huge names. And they're really just doing extraordinary work. And they bring a sense of play and fun to it and huge respect. You know, the fact that we shot that first season in the pandemic and the lockdown, it meant that we couldn't socialize, we couldn't hang out. You know, between takes, we were 6, 8 feet, 10 feet apart, all wearing our visors and everything. And yet, given all of the restrictions that were imposed and that we were, you know, just for pure safety's sake, we're trying to get this thing shot. Given all of those restrictions, we're still able to give a real sense of family and community and the fun that we were having. And you know, you just can't ask for a better group of people to be working with.
Mm-hmm. As time goes on, can we expect this series version of a Klingon or this series version of Vulcans, or are we going to see a whole different, let's say, alien race that these crew members will interact with on a regular basis?
That I can't say, Simon. I wish it could. I know. Well, I can certainly say that the Enar haven't appeared before, and you know, Hemmer's got a lot to say. You know, there's going to be some great Easter eggs. There's going to be I'm going to speak vaguely now. I don't want to give any spoilers away. But, yeah, you know, the title of the show is Strange New Worlds. So there's that. You know, it's certainly gone back to that episodic feeling that the original series had. I mean, they were introducing new worlds and new aliens on a weekly basis and inviting new ones into the Federation, into the canon. So I'm very excited to hear what the fans are going to think of, you know, some of the old ones and the new ones that are coming.
Yeah. So we also learn a little more backstory about how the Federation happened in the first place, or how Starfleet Academy came about, or if there was at some point before the Federation, there was another attempt to do what that organization does.
Well, we get into a bit of that, certainly the foundation of the Federation with Star Trek Enterprise, which was captained by Scott Bakula. And so I think that series actually ends with kind of the announcement of now we're moving into the Federation. I believe in the first episode of Strange New Worlds, they're actually dealing with something called, when they change it into the Prime Directive, which was their modus operandi, essentially as the Federation of going out and basically not interfering. So you have that. And certainly when you see the original series and going all the way up until to the latest stuff, I mean, the Prime Directive is a very challenging set of rules, and that's constantly being flexed and manipulated, you might say, or perhaps found creative ways to deal with it. And that's been kind of a staple throughout all of the Star Trek canon. So certainly I would expect that that challenge is going to be coming up again in terms of challenges to the Federation and whether or not it's going to last, whether it's going to change and all of that. I wish I could say.
Well, I want to give you an opportunity to make some news before you go, Bruce. Can you say whether or not you have a second season already in the bag?
The second season is currently shooting right now. Yeah, they announced that the second season was a go-ahead before the first season had even aired, which is, well, it's just a testament to the fans. I mean, they're just calling for it. And already, I think, just the fact that episode one has already got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, I think it bodes very, very well for this series. And if the energy of the crew and the cast is anything to sort of power a vehicle, it's probably going to go to, I was going to say Infinity and Beyond, but that's a whole other franchise. It's going to go to Strange New World.
And the just-started season one of Strange New Worlds now playing on Paramount+, Plus, available on most smart TV sets and smart TV devices near you. For more details about the promo online, go to www.ParamountPlus.com. That's www.ParamountPlus.com. Star Trek, Strange New Worlds, season one, already up, and season two in production and hopefully on the way to you, probably in 2023. Bruce Horak, thank you again very much for coming on. Congratulations to you, your entire cast, Alex, Jenny, Rod, the whole crew, for what you've accomplished so far. It looks like what started this past Thursday is going to be the beginning of a fantastic run that I think will equal or surpass all the other Star Trek shows as well. It's been a fantastic pleasure having you on.
Thank you so much, Simon. I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. All the greatest. Take care.
You too.
Bruce Horak from Star Trek Strange New Worlds joining us live from Stratford, Ontario, Canada. More tomorrow will be televised coming away, but first some words from the fine folks at audible.com. You know, if you are into books, and I mean lots of books, like a bookworm, maybe in hiding, well, there's a book, an audio book, that you might want to try. It's called, and it's a good one, Book Lovers by Emily Henry. And it's a book that you can get in audio form right now with a trial run to audible.com. In case you don't know, audible.com is by far the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's over 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. It's audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book. That one-month trial of the service, great customer service from Audible's parent, the one and only Amazon.com, and while supply lasts, very important and maybe life-saving health and wellness information. Remember, if you're already get my tongue untied here. Amazon Prime member already, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, and one of those books can come from the fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking about original audio programming, podcast series, The Best of Broadway. By the way, congratulations to all the Tony nominees that were announced earlier today. Off-Broadway and regional theater, and great one woman and one man performances. So how about making today the day you decide to try Audible.com and hear how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love any time of the year. Coming up in our next half hour, the Emmy Award-winning executive producer of The Amazing Race are at it again with The Quest that premieres Wednesday on Disney+. We will talk live with executive producers Bertram Van Muster and Elise Zunieri, plus our new classic trivia question and two prizes in play. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for the January Jones Show. Check out our next original episode Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. January Jones, always good listening with her and her guests. That's coming up Wednesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New Haven, York. We're going to pause for a moment so we can bring our next two guests up and running for you. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back with the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm with you live from New York, 663 at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for upcoming guests this half hour? Make a call, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And stay tuned, because coming up near the top of the hour, we'll have our brand new classic trivia question with two prizes in play. My next two guests, for many people, are two of the best when it comes to unscripted television. For a number of years, they have won multiple Emmy Awards for their work on the long-running CBS series, The Amazing Race. And on Wednesday, their latest creation comes on Disney+. It's called The Quest, and it may be the most unique program they have ever attempted. Joining us live is executive producers and award winners Elise Zunieri and Bertram Van Muster. Elise and Bertram, welcome in.
Thank you so much. First, I have to apologize. Bertram had to leave and he could not make the call. I'm so sorry. But it's just me, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
You got it, Elise, and we appreciate you talking about that. And, of course, Bertram is welcome back anytime. For those who don't know, Bertram was not only an Emmy Award winner, but also a pioneer in unscripted reality television, because he did a little thing called Cops back in the 1990s.
Yes.
One of the original producers of that show. John Langley, who was another of the creators, was on our show way back when, and Bertram's work, just tremendous. So congrats to him on having this show with you. So, Elise, we appreciate you, of course, taking the time to be with us. Talk about The Quest. This is really a very unusual mix of both scripted and unscripted TV.
Absolutely. You know, The Quest, it really is an epic fantasy adventure. It's like no other show out there. We have eight incredible teenagers that are going to be put into an immersive world that is real. They're in a 360-degree world that is a castle in Northern California, and where we filmed them entering Everrealm. And they're going to go on an adventure where they have to interact with scripted characters. There's a prince, there's princess, there's kings, there's sorceresses, there's all sorts of creatures. We have special effects, practical effects, and they're going to be doing, it's a reality competition, but it's organic. All the things that they do are organic to the storyline. And at the end, there is one person who is the one true hero.
Now, are these contestants also playing characters, not just interacting with everybody around them, but are they playing characters themselves?
No, they are coming into this world as themselves. They were cast because of their passion for this genre, the fantasy world. If you are anybody who likes, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, the fantasy world, if you've ever loved a fantasy movie or read a book that you wish you could have been in, this is that type of a world come to life. But these kids are real. They are themselves, and they are brought into this kingdom where they interact with people who are scripted characters, basically going through a storyline. And everything they say or do, the kids say or do, is just real, and it's how they react to everything around them.
How did this project come about? This is definitely a groundbreaker in the sense that we're having both elements, as I mentioned a moment ago, that are scripted and unscripted. And also, and the idea is to mesh it all in such a way that the viewer understands as well as the contestants understand.
Yeah, well, it came from originally from Mark Rodesky and Gene Fleming, who, after he was the executive producer on The Lord of the Rings, thought it would be kind of exciting to have some sort of an adventure camp type of, an experience where there'd be swords and horseback riding. And ultimately, that idea they brought to us as their partners, and we were asked, they were going to do the scripted side, and they had writers to write the scripted mythology, and they came to us, to our company, because we were, we had done the competition reality arena. And so we merged together with another company called Scout Productions, and we basically melded two genres that people probably never imagined would be melded, but it is a seamless and wonderful experience because you get to be a character. You become, you are yourself within a world that is a fantasy world. So these kids are dropped off into the countryside and they walk into this location that is a giant castle, and they're brought into the castle, and there they're meeting all the people in the storyline, and they are so well versed in their characters that if one of these teenagers asks them a question, they can answer in any way they like because that time they're being they're doing improv.
That's got to be a fun challenge for the actors, and not only for the actors but also for the writers involved, because as you said, there's a lot of improv here. You can't just, be a character that, stays with the script. At some point, you're going to have to find – you're going to have to react to what one of these contestants is up to.
That's absolutely correct. So they have a storyline that they're following. The scripted characters are, they're speaking to each other. They're speaking to the kids. But the kids also can ask anything they want. We never wanted it to feel, disjointed or, like something had been stopped down. So if one of the teenagers were to ask one of the characters, what's your specialty, what's your training specialty, or where were you born, these actors are so well versed in their bios, they can seamlessly, go right into improv, tell them about themselves. But also when there's more personal questions, or if one of the contestants, one of the teenagers is going through something or dealing with something, maybe they just completed a challenge and they did really well or they struggled through it, they might sit down or talk to one of these actors who will then give them, real feelings and emotion about, the experience that they just had. They'll talk to them as if they were, friends or going over a conversation about something that just went down. So there's a lot of touching moments where there's real moments both on the teenage contestants and with the actors.
Explain more about the world that everybody is in, both contestants and characters alike. What kind of world is this, and what are the challenges that the contestants have to deal with to maneuver themselves about this world to go for the big prize?
Okay, well, it's a fantasy world come to life, basically. It's a world called Everrealm, and there is a time of a lot of turmoil, and the castle is trying to be overtaken by an evil sorceress named Tavora. These kids are called upon by the fates, who are part of Everrealm, but they go between our world and Everrealm. They call these kids, and the kids show up at the castle, and then they are given their quest. Their quest is to find the first part that they have to do is there's a crown that is missing gemstones. The gemstones are stones of virtue. And to get the gemstones, they have to do challenges. There's a strength challenge, there's a courage challenge, a wisdom and a resilience challenge. And when they succeed or attempt to succeed at these challenges, they will acquire these gemstones. And they have to complete a crown, and ultimately they need to save the crown and get the kingstone, which is the centerpiece of that crown. So the kids are taken through all sorts of challenges that will test all the things that we feel are needed to be tested by ourselves as humans, right? As people, like, do we have insecurities about certain things? Do we feel strong enough to stand up to somebody? So it's basically facing your fears, facing any type of insecurity you might ever have, and then coming through on the other side, feeling as if you've been pulled through something where you're succeeding, or in part of something where you're succeeding. So it's really an adventure where the kids get to experience teamwork, working together, and where they're building each other up. They might have some failures, but there are other people surrounding them that are going to build them up and inspire them to keep going, keep trying. So it's really a very inspirational program where you'll see a lot of growth and change in the kids for greatness, you know, while they're having a blast.
We're talking about The Quest. It's the new Disney Plus series that premieres on Wednesday on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. And we are talking with one of the key executive producers, Emmy Award winner Elise Ogachery. She joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And we're happy you're joining us this Monday afternoon as well. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. 66 degrees at the bottom of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest. Ring that call in, 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week. We'll be back with you on Wednesday at this very hour, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific. And then on Friday, it's what you might call our new venture 90 minutes coming your way on the program. We'll spotlight three new ventures that will all be coming your way in various ways on your television set between now and the end of the year. We will talk with the chief executive officer of Chime TV, a new venture out to impact Asian Americans. She's also a trade association president, and that is Faith Batista. Also, we'll talk about Blockboard, the new use of blockchain technology to create new television series and other TV things as well. We'll meet the founder and executive producer, Matt Wasseloff, and the president and chief technical officer, Tyrone Yadar. And finally, reset from last week, from the new bilingual venture, Nuestra TV, and is a very ambitious one at that. We'll have Chief Executive Officer Alberto Pardo. It's all coming up on Friday, our new venture day, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I would think to have that kind of transformational, inspirational experience that you and your fellow producers had to do a lot of research about your contestants. Is that pretty much correct?
Well, we did a nationwide casting, and we, you know, in the casting, it was that if you love fantasy, if you love adventure, if you want to be part of something new and exciting. So we got a lot of applicants that love the genre that this program takes place in. And what we loved about each one of them is they all individually had different areas. They're very different, but different areas where they might have wanted to experience something that they may not have done before, that they wanted to overcome a fear, that they wanted to test themselves, or an insecurity of some sort. We also had a few kids that were very confident, but maybe also needed to learn how to be more of a team player because they were always doing things individually, individual sports. So it was a place where we cast such a diverse group of kids that when they did come together, they found a common bond because they really love this genre, but they also got to know kids that they may never have met before. We had one contestant is homeschooled, another kid goes to school in a big city. So they come from really diverse backgrounds, and it was really great to see them come together, united, and take on this challenge and just go at it with full enthusiasm, fully immersed.
Speaking of challenge, Elise, what was the most challenging part about putting this series together?
Well, the most challenging part, I would say, is, you know, trying to seamlessly combine scripted with reality. It's a fine line because you don't want the kids to act, you want the kids to be themselves, and you don't want the actors to feel like they're actors when they're talking to the kids. So just making sure that the script felt very natural, naturally spoken, that the actors who are so talented were able to express themselves and engage with the kids, that the kids felt comfortable with them, and they, you know, everybody really wanted to pull together for one common cause. So bringing those two worlds together was challenging but also exciting because I always love a challenge, and this was really fun. And on the side where they had all these tasks to do that they had to complete these challenges, having those fit also seamlessly into the script, making sure that it didn't look too gamey, that it felt like something that would naturally occur within the storyline.
Mm-hmm. Again, speaking of challenges, what are some of the tasks or the challenges that the contestants faced? Did everybody have the same challenge, or were there different challenges that were specific to specific contestants?
No, every teenager had to work within the same challenge. So in every episode, you'll see there are two different challenges. So there are times when the kids are working together for a common goal, and there's times when the kids are working together for a common goal, but they're doing it separately. And only one kid could win the gemstone for the virtues. So they would be, whether it would be a challenge about courage or wisdom, you know, a thinking type of a challenge, or resilience or strength. We made it fair, you know, based on their heights and their weights. Everything was figured out with our challenge team. So even though something might have been a strength challenge, if we had a kid that was, you know, 6 foot tall versus somebody who was 5 foot tall, we made accommodations for the different heights and weights so the kids could have the same experience and it would be a fair challenge across the board.
Mm-hmm. I would think when you're putting a program together like this, the two other elements you have to consider are, one, special effects or computer effects, mm-hmm. and what role they mm-hmm. might play in the storyline. And the other is the coronavirus pandemic, that you're shooting it in the midst of a in the midst of a pandemic situation. First of all, where did you shoot? Where did you film or tape the series? And the other thing is, did you make use of special effects? If so, how did that play into the storylines?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. We have many special effects, fantastic effects. First, I'll address, we filmed in Northern California in a castle that does exist, a fully functioning castle on acres and acres of property that was surrounded by rolling hills. You really felt like you were in another world when you were there. And we had an incredible art department that, you know, built lots of different sets for us and props that we use. There are gemstones that light up. There, all the special effects. There are a lot of practical effects, which are the effects that happen right in front of the kids' eyes that they got to experience. You know, we have things flying through the night sky that they see at night. They hear explosions. They hear sounds. They hear horns. They hear screams. So they got to see many special effects, and they got to, you know, experience the feeling of different things, mist and smoke and smells, all these things that you really got them to be immersed in the reality of where they were. And I know you said the COVID coronavirus. So we did film during the pandemic. We had an incredible team of about 300 people. We had COVID compliance officers on set. We wore masks and all the PPP that you can imagine. We were tested basically every other day, and we were in our own bubble. Nobody was allowed to go out beyond, you know, come to set every day, and you go back to your room, go to sleep, come back to work the next day. We had an incredible track record. Nobody got COVID, thank goodness. So that was a piece of it. But the effects, the costumes are stunning, and we had an incredible company that did all of our characters. We have creatures in the show that walk and talk. Like, these are stunt actors in costume, full body costume that you could touch and feel and speak to and, you know, walk around. So the costumes, the creatures, the special effects, and then in post what we did, we added to the special effects. So there's going to be some very exciting things that our actors and the teenagers didn't get to see that are going to be added to the edit, that were added to the edit. And so it's going to make this experience even grander. I hope I answered your question.
Certainly did. Alicia Vieri is one of the executive producers of The Quest. It premieres this Wednesday on Disney Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices all over the place. If you have a question or comment or many minutes with Elise, give us a call, 646-652-2906. And stay tuned, because coming up near the top of the hour, we have our brand new classic trivia question. And if you're the first to correct answer it, you get two prizes, both wonderful books, one for you and one for your small prize. So stay tuned. You could be our next trivia winner. What's it like working with of somebody like Bertram Van Muster, and also you have some other people working on your company together called New Media Collective. How do you complement each other?
Mm-hmm. Well, Bertram and I have been married. I don't know if you know that, but Bertram and I have been married
since
2000.
Did not know.
2000.
Okay, got the...
you got the memo.
Got the memo.
You know what?
The
beauty of that work...
orally.
Okay, Bertram and I have been working together for over 20 years, and it's always a little tricky sometimes working with your spouse, with your partner, but we bring to everything we do a passion for creating, you know, high-end quality programming and entertainment. Bertram was born in Holland. He has a background as a commercial director and a director, and I grew up in New York, and I went to school for graphic design and advertising. So, you know, coming from, you know, his European background, my American background, it's a yin and yang type of thing. We're both type A personalities. He's extremely creative. I would say he's big picture. He sees everything as one giant whole, right? He can see the beginning, middle, and end. And I'm a person that likes to get into the details of all the intricacies of how everything works. How is this challenge working? How is this melding into the script? You know, I'm more detail-oriented, and he's big picture. We don't always agree, but the beauty of that is that people don't typically want to disagree with us, so it's nice to get the truth from your partner because they're going to tell you exactly how it is. So I consider it a plus working with somebody that I love and I live with, and it's a benefit. He's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
And something else that unites both of you is that you go for very ambitious projects. I mean, The Amazing Race, just to name one, that's ambitious as it gets. To do that year after year, and in some cases twice a year, to do a race that takes place literally all over the world, do it on the scale and the time frame that you both do, with your production crew and your contestants, and make it all work for years on CBS, and then this show, it just shows that ambition is like a number one game for you.
It is our priority. We never want to be bored. We never want to do what's already been done, and so we try to work on projects that are very creative, very unique, groundbreaking. And, you know, The Amazing Race, we're going into our 34th season. We're starting pre-production now. And I just wrote a book, An Amazing Race Travel Guide, that's going to come out in October, which I'm super excited about. So, yeah, we don't do anything, you know, small. We love a challenge. And we are very hands-on. I mean, Bertram and I still go out on the road every season with The Amazing Race while we're filming, and we're involved from all the creative, you know, points of view with The Amazing Race, to casting, to editing and filming while we're out there. So, yeah, that was born out of my brain over 20 years ago after a backpacking trip I took with my college roommate. And Bertram had all the connections because he's been in the business forever, and he had all the contacts on a global scale of the places that we could get into. And he knew where we could go because he knew people everywhere. So it was a good match when the two of us got together.
Elise, now that you've done the quest, do you see you and your company doing more in terms of hybrid scripted, unscripted programming? And if this works on Disney Plus, do you see more people attempting, if not similar projects, even more ambitious projects?
Yes, I do. I do think that in success, which I feel really good about the show. I'm excited. I have butterflies in my stomach about it, very much in the way that I did when we did The Amazing Race the first season. And when we did The Amazing Race in the first season in 2000 and came out in 2001, you know, reality programming was not spoken about too much, and it was kind of pushed down. It was the underdog. This new genre that we're creating, which is the scripted and reality, you know, integrated together, is also a new genre that I think could just explode. And I think we've really nailed it with this series. Disney Plus was ambitious enough to believe in us, take the chance. This is something I know that they're very interested in having growth for. And we already have we don't have a pickup yet, but we want one. But we already have the other worlds and scripts, you know, in process. We are ready to go for season two. We just need viewers to love it and say great things about it. So we would be super excited to do another season and keep this genre growing.
The Quest, it's the brand new project from Disney Plus, and it is a groundbreaker, and you can start seeing it this Wednesday on that service, which is available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place. For more details about the service and the program online, go to www.disneyplus.com. That's www.disney, P-L-U-S, not the plus sign, plus the word, .com. The Quest, it all starts Wednesday. Elise Guglieri, the executive producer with Bertram and Muster and others from New Media Collective on the program, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations to you and Bertram on making this happen, along with the rest of your production crew and team. And hopefully, who knows, we may have another long run like The Amazing Race coming our way.
Hope so. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Lee. Your best to Bertram and all the crew. Take care.
Thank you. Take care.
Elise Guglieri joining us live here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia segment. First, let's give you the question that we did not get a winner for over the last 2 weeks. And that question was, what was Robert Conrad's first television series? The answer, Hawaiian Eye, produced by Warner Brothers, ran on ABC for four seasons, 1959 and 1963. That was Robert Conrad's first television series. All right, time for a brand new question. Again, we are offering the new best-selling book about TV called Binge Time, whose authors, Don Chulisky and Dade Hayes, were on this program several weeks ago. And we're also adding another wonderful book, A Rugrats Hanukkah. That's right. It's the book version of the wonderful Rugrats special that came out a long time ago, based on the popular series from Arlene Klasky, Gabriel Crispo, and Paul Germain. And you can get both books if you know the answer to this classic trivia question. On the TV series Quincy M.E., starring Jack Klugman, whose episodes, by the way, you can now catch more of on YouTube, what does M.E. stand for? On the TV series Quincy M.E., starring Jack Klugman, what does M.E. stand for? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. First correct answer, you win both the Rugrats Hanukkah and Binge Time. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter, Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBC. One final time, the question. On the TV series Quincy M.E., what does the M.E. stand for? SimonApple04@yahoo.com is how you play. And remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So do so, and all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today, all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, we're back on Wednesday at this very hour, and then Friday, big 90-minute New Venture Edition. And if you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcasts. They're available all over the place, including Spotify, iRadio Podcast Network, and other locations. And I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our guest today? What's your thoughts about where TV is at and where it's going? Email me. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. However you respond, we respond back within 24 hours. And that's why, because what you say matters, now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. Now, so those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Toe is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg is head of content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitars Vegas is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we tell my sponsor by Audible.com, the audio marketplace on Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For a free audiobook or two and much more, it's audibletrials.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or anyone you love. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Great rest of your Monday. We are back in less than 48 hours, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tune Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. And don't forget, if you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor, check your medical situation, find out all the special treatments now available to you, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.